From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, March 2nd, 2018. And on this day, a finding that Maine's Department of Health and Human Services did not follow policies that could have prevented child abuse. And new numbers on Maine's lobster fishery find fewer landings, but still one of the best years ever. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
First tonight, a recent report from the Maine Children's Ombudsman found that the Department of Health and Human Services failed to follow proper assessment policy in several child welfare cases, including children in their parents' care. Earlier this week, a 10-year-old girl from Stockton Springs was found beaten to death in her home after months of abuse. Former neighbors and school officials say they contacted DHHS with concerns about possible child abuse. And as Patty White reports, several lawmakers are now calling for an investigation into how DHHS handled the case.
In her 2017 report, Maine's Child Welfare Services Ombudsman said multiple child abuse cases involved the department's, quote, failure to follow assessment policy, failure to follow safety planning policy, or failure to recognize risk to children in their parents' care. Of particular concern, said Christine Alberi, were cases involving highly vulnerable children. The extent to which DHHS was involved with 10-year-old Marissa Kennedy is unclear. Her mother and stepfather are now charged with her murder. But Republican Senate President Mike Thibodeau says he thinks her death could have been prevented.
There were red flags on multiple occasions. The system failed this little girl.
Marissa Kennedy attended school in Bangor last year and more recently lived in Stockton Springs. Several former neighbors from Bangor told reporters this week that they witnessed or heard what sounded like abuse in the home and repeatedly called police. On Thursday, Bangor School Superintendent Dr. Betsy Webb issued a statement that staff contacted DHHS on several occasions to report suspected abuse while Marissa Kennedy was a student. Senator Thibodeau now wants Governor LePage to investigate DHHS's handling of Kennedy's case.
We want to make sure that the chief executive, this is high on his priority list, and that he takes a personal interest in making sure and understanding what has happened and being absolutely committed to improving the checks and balances, because this can't happen again.
Thibodeau isn't the only lawmaker calling for an investigation.
It's not about pointing a finger at HHS, necessarily.
Democratic Representative Patty Hymanson is co-chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. She says she wants to know DHHS protocol after someone makes a call to report suspected abuse. How is it, she wants to know, that 10-year-old Marissa slipped through the cracks?
What was the problem that broke down? Are our caseworkers overwhelmed? You know, they're wonderful people, and they I'm sure, are up at night because of this tragedy.
Hymanson is sending a letter to the Government Oversight Committee to ask them to conduct an expedited review of DHHS's process. A spokeswoman for Governor LePage issued a written statement saying that DHHS is conducting a thorough internal investigation, as is the Child Death Review Panel, an independent body. The findings will be reported to the governor for his review and action. DHHS did not respond to a request for comment about the call for the investigation. But in 2017, the department did provide a response to the assessment from the Maine Children's Ombudsman's report. It said its Office of Child and Family Services engages in monthly face-to-face contacts in critical cases and actively works with staff, quote, to promote improvements where needed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
After losing a lengthy lawsuit, the LePage administration is finally releasing millions of dollars in job training funds to Maine's regional workforce boards. But as Robbie Feinberg reports, proposed requirements on how to spend that money have some workforce board officials unsure if they can build the state's job training system back up to what it once was.
means three regional workforce development boards are set up to help train tens of thousands of job seekers across the state each year. But much of that work froze last fall. That's when Governor Paul LePage refused to release about $8 million in federal funds to the boards. LePage has long wanted to eliminate the boards, but the U.S. Department of Labor has rejected his requests. And regional officials say that when LePage refused to release job training funds in the fall, it had a big impact on their operations.
There's no question that services had come pretty much to a halt.
Michael Beret is the director of Coastal Counties Workforce, Inc., the regional workforce board based in Brunswick. He says without the money, local job training organizations had to lay off staff. Beret says the organization that Coastal Counties contracts with, called Workforce Solutions, laid off about 15 workers, about 75% of its staff. Similar organizations across Maine also saw cutbacks. And the regional workforce board in central and western Maine even lost its executive director.
There's definitely going to be a pretty sizable impact on the volume of customers that we serve, but I can certainly tell you there's been a big drop.
In October, Coastal County sued the LePage administration for the federal funds, and a judge ruled in its favor in January. LePage appealed the ruling, but officially dropped that appeal on Thursday. And regional workforce boards now say that over the past 2 weeks, they finally received the funds that have been held up for months. Joanna Russell, the executive director of the Northeastern Workforce Development Board in Bangor, says she's thankful for the money. She says that when federal funds were lost this past fall, more than 2,200 job seekers were left on their own. Russell says the state tried to help as many as they could, but she believes that it will take months to track them all down and get them back in the system.
These are people who were engaged in job training programs, job search, work experience, etc. So all 2,200 people somehow were impacted, and we just don't know the full scope of that.
And Russell says local service providers will now need to hire back much of their staff, which could take weeks or months. And even now, after receiving the federal money, workforce directors say new proposed changes to how that money must be spent could leave the system unable to handle its usual volume of customers. In January, the Maine State Workforce Board approved a new policy requiring the regional boards to spend at least 70% of the federal funds on job training. That new minimum would be the highest in the country. Currently, less than 40% of federal funds go to training in Maine. And Russell says it's not feasible to get that number up to 70. She says federal law requires workforce boards to spend much of their federal funds on crucial services other than direct job training. Those include case management and counseling to help youth, laid off workers, and at-risk clients such as single mothers and those with addiction problems.
In order for these folks to get off public assistance or to finally let go of unemployment insurance, in order for them to do that, they need this kind of support. That's why they were put in place in the first place.
The state is still accepting comments on the modified workforce plan, which will have to be approved by the Federal Department of Labor before it becomes a requirement in July. Neither Governor LePage's office nor the Maine Department of Labor responded to requests for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
New numbers from the State Department of Marine Resources show that Maine's lobster harvest dropped more than 15% last year. But although the haul is down, it's the sixth highest on record. Fred Bever has details.
Lobstermen knew from early last year that the catch would probably fall off from 2016 when they brought in a record 131 million pounds of the valuable crustacean.
My July was pretty much non-existent.
Kurt Brown fishes lobster out of Portland, and he works as a biologist for Ready Seafood, one of the state's largest lobster dealers.
And it was just a waiting game, slowly trickling out, and so the rest of the year was decent. It certainly wasn't a banner year.
It wasn't exactly a bad year, either. Overall, the state's lobstermen landed more than 110 million pounds of lobster, the sixth most on record. And at an average $3.91 a pound at the dock, they earned a total of more than $450 million, the fourth highest ever. But it was the smallest haul seen since 2011, and no one in the industry says the recent boom can last forever. Scientists say their models show decline will be inevitable as the Gulf of Maine's waters continue to warm past what recently has been an optimal range for lobster productivity. Recent science also shows that Maine lobstermen's long-established practices for protecting fertile females add resilience to the population here. Department of Marine Resources Commissioner Patrick Kelleher says decline will come and good management will slow its progress. But he does not believe a downward trend is establishing itself now.
I don't think anything's going on with the resource. Not yet. There's no trend showing. We've been 7 years over 100 million pounds of landings here in the state of Maine. We were down 16% versus last year. But if you compare it to the 4 or 5 years previous, we're down, but not a tremendous amount.
Kelleher says the landings were strongest down east, where water temperatures, for the most part, are coldest. Not that there aren't some anomalies, with fishermen in the state's westernmost quadrant still landing near record hauls, he says, but perhaps by spending more time at sea than they used to. Kelleher adds the fishery appears to be headed farther away from the coastline.
There's certainly a spatial change in the fishery from inshore to offshore. We see it. We see the gear offshore. Marine Patrol is certainly spending much more time offshore than they are inshore. So those are things that we know are happening.
And while the fleet may be moving offshore, there's an open question about whether juvenile lobster may be as well. Data collected by Kelleher's agency show that the number of juveniles settling inshore has been waning in recent years, even while egg-bearing adult females remain abundant. One theory is that more juveniles are settling in deeper, colder waters, and a 2-year-old project to try to document that is entering its third year. Lead scientist Richard Wally of the Darling Marine Center in South Bristol says last year's decline in mature lobsters landed correlates with a drop in inshore juvenile settlers that began in 2009. That trend continues, he says, and could presage another decline in the mature lobster harvest this year.
There's still some uncertainty about how this will play out. We're not looking at catastrophic declines. Those are not in the forecast, but they are nonetheless significant and should give the industry pause about their future.
The state is releasing landings data for some 21 commercially harvested marine species. One bright spot, the scallop fishery, which after severe depletion through the early 2000s bounced back last year to levels not seen in more than 2 decades, almost 800,000 pounds harvested. DMR Commissioner Kelleher credits that result to what he calls micromanagement by his agency and the Maine-based fleet of scallop day boats. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, March 2nd, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.